Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Author John Boyne, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So this time last year, you were here talking about the second of your very powerful four-part Elements series of books, and that was Earth. So the fourth and final novella, Air, is just out. And I want to ask you about that. But we're going to talk about something else close to your heart today as well, music. So you've picked five songs that have meant a lot to you in your life. Music's very important to you, is it?
Yeah, it is. It's a big part of my life, actually. I like playing music. I love playing piano. It's always been part of my life, and I think if I hadn't been a writer, you know, music is something I really would have liked to pursue. I guess there's that sort of creative element inside myself.
Well, listen, it's not too late. And your first choice is a boy band classic.
Yes.
You like a good boy band. Did you audition for Boyzone?
I did, Brent. And I finally decided to come out with this story. Back in my youth, when I was about 21, I did, in fact, audition for Boyzone. I had blonde hair, spiky blonde hair. I had these green contact lenses. And I remember the song that I sung was Any Dream Will Do. Yeah. I got up and I did that. And, I didn't make it into Boyzone. So I don't know if like music's loss is literature's gain, or perhaps my critics would have it the other way around, that music's gain was literature's loss.
Give me a blast of Any Dream Will Do. Let's
No, you can't ask me to do that. I did do it once on Miriam's show. I once played the guitar and sang an Eddie Vedder song. But
give me a line.
Oh, I close my eyes.
Oh, yeah, you have a nice quality in there.
It was good. So I've always been loved boy bands. Whenever I talk about music on anything, I'm not one of those who's going to be talking about Chopin and Mozart and Beethoven. I'm a pop kid to my core, and always have been. I've always sort of been into the charts. I'm that generation that, like, still at 7:30 on a Thursday night, I'm expecting Top of the Pops to come on. And, you know, I'm always sort of aware of the charts. People aren't anymore, I don't think. But it was always like, I know you felt like this when you were a teenager, that, you know, I always knew what number one was. And my friends would talk about, you know, what you saw on Top of the Pops the night before. So boy bands have always been very close to my heart. I felt I've missed my calling in some way, that I should have been in one.
Well, look, music's loss was literature's gain anyway. Now, you haven't picked a ha today, but I believe they were important to you at a certain stage of your development.
A certain stage, yeah. Maybe it's sort of the 14-year-old stage where I did see Morten Harkett on Top of the Pops with his, the big quiff and the white T-shirt and the leather thongs around the wrist. And maybe something sort of, you know, tripped inside myself that Thursday night with Top of the Pops. And I thought, Morten, okay. It's Morten I like, not Madonna. So a big part of my development.
In fairness, you didn't have to be gay to admire Morten. He was beautiful.
He was a beautiful looking man. Yeah. My voice nearly broke when I said that.
He had kind of a little gap in his teeth. The teeth weren't perfect the way everyone's teeth are perfect.
Elton John has that little gap in his front teeth. I always was told that if you have that little gap, you're a good singer.
And you were a Westlife fan too, were you?
Westlife
or,
too.
Or was it specifically a Mark Feely fan?
Both. I mean, I always preferred Westlife to Boyzone. I think they had better songs and they had better singers. With great respect to the Boyzone boys, some of them it seemed to me sort of like the job was really just sort of turning around moodily and looking at a camera.
Are you still bitter about the audition?
I'm a little bit better. Yeah. I am a little bit better. Yeah, you know, it hasn't quite gone away. I did. I asked Cecilia Ahern once to see could she set me up with Mark from Westlife. You got to use, you know, what you have. And so I tried that. She did try, to be fair, but it turned out that Mark was seeing somebody and was very happy. He did send me a little video, though, to let me down easily, which is nice of him. That was nice.
Okay, so why this first choice? It's Backstreet Boys and As Long As You Love Me.
Well, it's very hard to choose the best boy band song of all time because there are so many. Frankly, they're all great, and but this is one that I just really love. It's got a great lyric. It's got a great video. It's a great piece of music. So yeah, a little bit of Backstreet Boys.
I'll take your word for that. Backstreet Boys, John Boyne's first choice today. As Long As You Love Me. Okay, I'm one over there, I have to say. That's John Boyne's first choice, As Long As You Love Me, by the Backstreet Boys. And that real sharp production as well was coming in then, wasn't it? That kind of Swedish kind of...
Yeah, Max Martin, who did a lot of Britney Spears songs and things as well.
So, listen, the thing is, you mentioned you can play the piano. So you could have actually added a touch of class to Boyzone, couldn't you? You're classically trained, are you?
Well, I mean, I suppose I am. But, you know, my dad took myself and my siblings to piano lessons from the time we were about 5 or 6. We used to go on a Wednesday night to a woman called Madame Fox, who was, if memory serves, she was about like 120 years old at the time. And she's off the South Circular Road. You know, I was just a small child. And I must admit, at the time, I didn't like it. It was very hard. And but now I look back, and it was, I think, the best gift my dad ever gave me, in a way, was giving me that music. Because as I got older then, and when I wasn't having to play classical music, and I wasn't having to kind of learn it for a Wednesday evening and be shouted at, you know, for not having my scales done correctly or something, when I was able to do it just for pleasure, just for fun, and play the songs I wanted to play, then it became something fantastic to me. And it's so relaxing. You know, I find, like, when I'm at home, if I have a stressful day or just the words aren't coming or something, I can, you know, I'm happy to just sort of sit at the piano for half an hour and play music. And I think it's a great gift to give a child, actually. My nephew, Jamie, he just had his first child there about a week ago. And Jamie is a great guitarist and a great piano player, better than myself and my siblings are, much more natural. And I did say to him, you know, last week, you know, when are you going to get him on the piano? You know, and he's like, oh, yeah, you know, as quick as he can, you know.
Yeah, I think so many people regret that they didn't keep up the piano lessons their parents forced them to go.
It is great. Do you play an instrument?
I gave up my piano lessons at a particular point.
Like, well, you should go and try back to it, because I took a good sort of 7 or 8 years off it before I sort of got my own piano and then, you know, decided to.
And do you bang away
on
kind of tunes now, like songs, or do you play the classical pieces?
No, it would be songs. It would be songs that I could sing along to. You know, the kind of stuff that, say, at a Christmas, you know, you could sit down and just play, you know, a few songs that people would know and can sing. That's really more my kind of thing. I wouldn't be good at playing classical music. I wouldn't be good at playing classical music, but I'm pretty decent at playing a song.
Yeah, and I believe the next song you've chosen is your party piece at the Boyne.
My party
gatherings.
Piece would be Your Song by Elton John, which of course is, you know, it's a classic, of course. But what's great about it as well is when you play that those opening chords, everybody knows that and it's a beautiful song to play. And I love Elton John's music. I've always loved Elton John's music, but because it's all written for piano, it makes it not easier to play, but it's more natural then to play on a piano than playing maybe a guitar-based song that you're adapting for a piano. So I can play quite a bit of Elton on the piano. And I don't go to concerts.
Not easy, anymore. I'd say. I'd say you have to be good enough to be able to play Elton songs,
you have to be, like, decent enough, but once you get into it, it's good. And I did see Elton John in concert once in Slough, of all places. I always think, you know, most romantic sort of city in the world, Slough. But it was years ago, and it was great because it was a concert in aid of Sport Aid. So it was just like 2,000 people. So it was a small venue. Yeah. And it was just Elton and the piano. There was no band. And it was just him for like 2 hours banging away on the piano and singing all the hits. And it was so intimate that I thought it was great.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Okay, here's John Boyne's second choice, his party piece, Elton John, Your Song.
My gift is my song, and this one's for you. And you can tell everybody this is your song.
That's Your Song, Elton John. And as John Boyne was just saying there, between singing along to it, it's almost the perfect song in a way, and he has a point. John, the next song I know is a song that has helped you through difficult parts of your life. So we might just take the opportunity to talk about the book for a minute now. So the Four Elements books, now complete, they look at sexual abuse from different perspectives, as people may know. So I've read Fire and Air since I saw you last. Fire was so good. And Air, the final one, is excellent. Draws a lot of the strands together, I guess. But one of the striking things about it is you portray so deftly and so subtly, but so with such truth, the effect of abuse on someone as an adult. And I did think, reading it, is there a lot of you in Aaron?
There's probably some, you know, whether consciously or subconsciously, the whole project, because, you know, when we talked about it before and you kindly had me on for the first two, that I wanted to look at these four different perspectives, the enabler, the complicity, the perpetrator and the victim. But I always knew in my head that when I would get to air the final volume and narrating it from the victim's point of view, that strangely enough, it would be the lighter of the four, because I wanted it to have a positive ending.
Yeah.
I wanted anybody who has gone through something like that to feel that you can survive something like that. You can come out on top. You know, you can kind of get through it, if not get over something, but just come to terms with it, and your life does not have to be defined by the darkest moments in it. And if you allow it to be defined by those darkest moments, then anybody who hurts you actually continues to have that hold. So I wanted Aaron, and I wanted the novel Air, to be less dark than the first three, and that anybody who's been with this series all along hopefully would find it a kind of a cathartic and moving resolution to the four books.
Yeah. Was it helpful for you to finish it?
Yeah. I mean, it was a three-year project of writing all together. And I must say, you know, you mentioned Fire, the third one. As I was writing that one, that was the hardest point for me, because I was in the voice of the perpetrator there. I knew I still had one more novel to write after it.
Yeah.
And you can't really write about a subject like that for so long without it having some emotional effect on you. You'd be made of stone if you did. And it's no surprise in a way that the novel I'm writing at the moment is so much more lighthearted. It's the complete opposite of these four, because I needed a break from all of that.
Yeah.
But it was hard to write it, but I think that is the job of a writer. Sometimes, you know, you have to take something challenging. You have to challenge yourself with it. You have to explore, like, deep down inside yourself. Not everything is light. Not everything is a love story. Sometimes you want to, and sometimes you feel ready. You know, you feel skilled enough to take on something that has affected you.
And yeah, presumably you had to do it at some stage. Does it feel in any sense of a weight off you? Was there a catharsis for you in doing
it? Yeah, I think so. I think it has been quite cathartic for me. I think the fact that I've had four bites of the cherry in a way, talking about the subject in interviews, in festival events and so on, and in the books themselves, that it's given me 2 years of promotional activity talking about something that I didn't talk about for a long time.
Yeah.
And that's been good. And now, in a way, when the books come to an end, I don't feel it's a subject I'm going to return to, at least in any time soon. You know, I feel like I've written about it and really explored it for myself. There were so many questions I wanted to understand myself in each of them. Like, why would somebody enable it? Why would somebody do it? How does somebody feel after it? You know, and I think I resolved a lot of those questions for myself in the four books. It's when I set out on them at the start, if I could have read all four now, then I think I would have felt, I think if I can say so myself, I think I did a pretty decent job on it.
I think you did a tremendous job on it. I think it's a terrific achievement. Just one more quick question on it. We also met the original abuser, so to speak, who kind of almost set in train the four books. And I was surprised in a way, because he was basically an unrepentant, self-justifying kind of a bully of a man.
Yeah.
And you had, there was a level of understanding about some of the abusers along the way, but this guy just seemed like a bad bastard.
Well, you know, I think that's the case. And I know that when I spoke to the guards on various occasions, that, you know, they told me about even the abusers who have pled guilty in court, often that will be, they know they're going, you know, they know that they're going down, and it'll help the sentence. But that oftentimes there is no remorse there at all. And, you know, in Fire, the third book, that's what I was dealing with. I was dealing with a character who has no real remorse. We saw some of her backstory and what would lead her to it. And with the character in the fourth book that we met originally, or didn't meet, but start, as you say, in the first book. I guess I didn't want to make those characters, the abusers, in any way sympathetic, to be honest. So.
Yeah. So as I was saying, this third song choice is one that I think has helped you in difficult times in your life. Yeah.
Well, I think to me, this is, you know, it's also almost a perfect song. One of the great songs of my life, Don't Give Up, by Peter Gabriel and Kate Bush. Two reasons for this. One, firstly, I love Kate Bush. She's been my number one singer my whole life since I was about seven. I've adored Kate Bush. I'm a complete fan. But Don't Give Up, which was on Peter Gabriel's So album, has the most beautiful lyrics. And it when people listen to it, and especially Kate's part when in the chorus, don't give up, you still have friends. Don't give up, you're not beaten yet. There's a place where you belong. And there's been, you know, everybody, us, everybody listening to this today, we've all had great moments in our lives and we've all had dark moments and troublesome moments. I've had my share, no more, no less than anybody else. But I've always found that when I listen to Don't Give Up at my at any sort of low moment, it brings me back. You know, it makes me realise that for all the bad stuff that happens in life, there is so much brightness too. There's still your family, there's still your friends, there's still your ambition, there's still, you know, if you're lucky enough to love your job, and to remember that there are people who love you and that don't want to see you beaten.
Yeah. Music can be such a balm, can't it? Here's John Boyne's third choice, Don't Give Up, by Kate Bush and Peter Gabriel. I'm in bits now after how beautifully you spoke going into it and then the song. I'm in bits. That's John Boyne's third choice. These are great choices. Don't Give Up by Kate Bush and Peter Gabriel. You were showing me you have a Kate Bush.
Yeah, on my I have two tattoos. On my left arm, I have the phrase, "We are all terminal cases," which is the last line of The World According to Garp.
Yeah.
And on my right arm, "Wave After Wave" from Hounds of Love by Kate Bush. So when people ask you about them, I can say, favourite writer, favourite singer.
And you got to meet her.
Yeah, we had lunch in London last year, and I was able to show her this. I had written, she had brought out a book of her song lyrics, and I had theoretically reviewed it, but really sort of assessed it in a way and written about it in the Irish Times. And then when it was published in paperback, they'd used a quote, and one thing led to another, and we connected. And she'd always been sort of a mythological figure.
That's it. I'm thinking she's got to be a disappointment as just a mere person.
So wonderful, and so kind, and so lovely. And she brought me this lovely thing from my window, a sort of a light. So when the sun shines, it puts different colours around. And I just gave her some of my books. That's how narcissistic I am.
And a framed picture of you. Okay. So listen, Air is partly kind of set in Australia. Did you do your annual stint in Australia at the start of the year?
I did. Yeah. 2 months actually, this time I started in New Zealand, a week or so there, and then went on to Sydney and stayed there till actually the start of March this time. And
is there mission creep here? It's getting longer every time.
It sort of is. I mean, I think the longest I ever did was I came back sort of the week before St. Patrick's Day. So,
And your next song is Australia related. It's Tom Waits' take on Waltzing Matilda. But it's obvious, does Australia feel like a kind of a spiritual?
It does.
Second spiritual,
it does. I mean, every year when it gets close to Christmas, I feel this pang, this, you know, to get there again. And
what resonates for you there?
You know, the first time I went there was 2007 with Striped Pyjamas. And I've been every year since 2007. And there's something about sort of being as far away from home as you can possibly be without coming back again that matters to me.
Yeah.
I love the sunshine. I love the beaches. I love the people. It just feels like a different planet. And the world is a small place in its way. But Australia to me feels just like somewhere completely different. And I feel like I don't know, might have lived there in a past life. You know, if I had one, or maybe if I do write in this one, in the future one, I can actually just grow up there. And I just love going there, and I feel this total connection. And I have so many friends there now, and writer friends and non-writer friends. And just as I was walking into the studio, I actually was just hearing on your news thing there about the Australian election, you know, and, you know, a friend who's was running in that and won his seat again, and which reminded me I had to text him. And so I just love it. And I always hope that I get to the point in my life where I know it will be my last trip to Australia. You know, like if I get to the point where, so, you know, when I'm 80s and 90s, where you can't travel so much anymore. But I hope I get to know that this is my last one, so I can kind of say my goodbye to it. So
you're such a drama queen. Yeah, am I? I know what you mean. Like, but the fact that you're thinking about that already, like the opera of the final trip.
I know.
You know,
well, I mean,
fantastic.
You know, obviously, they will have a national day in celebrating me. My one ambition. Sorry, I'll just say this. Yeah. That my one remaining ambition in life is I want to do a reading in the Sydney Opera House. You know, that's it. I want to do a reading.
That'll happen. So why this Tom Trobert's
Blues? Yeah, Tom Trobert's Blues by Tom Waits. And it's a beautiful song. It's about like a soldier at the end of the war who's like, his life's going nowhere. He's drunk. Everything's falling apart for him. But he incorporates the Waltzing Matilda song into this. And it's beautiful. It's actually one that, going back to me playing the piano at Christmas, I often play this as well for my family, and it's very depressing. But it's a beautiful piece of music, and you know Tom Waits has such a his vocal performance is so interesting and moving and powerful, and I just love it. But it reminds me of Australia all the time.
Okay, here we go.
Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda.
Another fantastic choice from John Boyne there. That's Tom Trobert's Blues by Tom Waits. I don't think you have the blues at the moment. Your life is good. You're in good form.
Life is great. Great. You know, working away. Delighted to have these four books done, starting the next one. Everything in my life is going really well.
You mentioned earlier your nephew's had a child. Now, this is the thing that creeps up on us younger and younger now. You become a granduncle.
Yeah.
It does kind of make you feel like an old fella, doesn't it? Because remember, granduncles like were...
Well, I suppose in one way, but it's fantastic though as well. You know, a new generation, a new kid, little Casey. And I haven't got to meet him yet. He's only 8 days old. So I'm going to see him soon because they're up in Cavan. But it's exciting. And I love kids. I love babies and, you know...
I saw a very nice, thoughtful piece you wrote about kind of coming to terms with the fact that you love kids, but that you were probably never going to become a father at this stage now.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote that for one of the newspapers, and it's true. And it's not something that weighs me down at all. It's something I would have loved to have been. But I always say I put all of those paternal longings into my nephews and nieces, and you know had a fantastic time helping bring them up, and building great relationships with them. It's been, you know, I think the thing I have been most successful in life at isn't actually being a writer, it's being an uncle. That's been the thing I've done best in my life.
I'd say you're a great uncle. Not literally. Yeah, you know what I'm saying, yeah. And by the way, happy birthday. Was it your birthday this week?
It was my birthday during the week.
What did you get up to?
Oh, you know, the usual thing on birthdays, went for a massage, a facial, tapas, Lego, and a Hunger Games marathon. Isn't that what most people do on their birthday?
Pretty much, yeah. That's the birthday bucket list right there. And there's that new love in your life as well?
Yeah, great. Almost a year now we've been together. And I just could not imagine being as happy as I am. We met almost a year ago. And just this wonderful, wonderful man. And every day is just filled with laughter and kindness and thoughtfulness and... I don't know how I got so lucky. I just, I wasn't expecting it at this point, but he came along and may he be there for a long time, I hope.
Okay, fantastic. I hope so. And so that brings us to your final song, and this is the things you do for love. You have chosen Drake, One Dance. Tell me why.
Yes. This wouldn't, you know, if I'd been here a year ago and you'd said to me I would have chosen Drake, it would have been a shock to me. But while I was in Australia, we were there together in Australia and we stayed on for, Drake was doing his world tour at the moment. And we went to his concert in an arena in Sydney. And, you know, I'm not really into rap, not opposed to it, but it wouldn't really be my thing. But off we went to this Drake concert because my partner is a huge Drake fan. And we went to it and we got this, I decided, you know, I'm going to do this VIP package where before it, you go to like the pre-party, you know, like 100 people where there's a DJ and you get all the merch, you know, in a goodie bag.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, and champagne and all that. And it was great fun. I've never seen anybody as excited as he was, you know, in my life, both there and in the show itself. He like practically hovering off the seat in excitement. And it's great, you know, when you see somebody you love so happy, you think, this is what life is all about. So, and the concert itself was great. I mean, in some ways for me, it's 2 hours of a guy just shouting into a microphone, but, you know, that's okay. And it took me out of my comfort zone because it's not something I would normally do. And it was great fun. And now when I hear Drake on the radio or something, it just makes me smile because I think of my partner. And you've got to do things for other people, I think, that you wouldn't normally do if it makes them happy.
Okay. So the final novella in the Element series, Air, is in bookshops now. And John, you'll be in conversation with author Claire Kilroy in Dunleary's Pavilion Theatre on Tuesday. But I think that's sold out. And there's a text here, actually lots of very warm texts. A woman saying here, reading the final book, can't put it down. Looking forward to meeting John on Tuesday in Dunleary. But there's lots and lots of so many warm texts and people. The Heart's Invisible Fury, best book I ever read. I sobbed when I finished it. Love him. Lovely, dear John. People really respecting the music choices. They're loving the music choices. So that's Dunleary on Tuesday.
Yeah.
But you'll also be at Writers Week in Listowel in conversation with Roisin Meany on May 30th.
Yeah, I think those tickets have just gone on sale.
Okay.
And
okay.
I'll be at the Hinterland Festival in Kells in June as well.
Okay, so Air is the book, and if you haven't read the other three, you could just read Air, but I would advise anyone to start at the beginning and go through. They're all there now, and they are terrific. John Boyne, thank you very much, and we'll play out now on your final track today. I sense this is a little bit of a request sent out with love to your partner.
Absolutely, who's hopefully listening in.
Okay, Drake, One Dance.
Grips on your ways, front way, back way. You know that I don't play. Streets not safe, but I never run away. Even when I'm away. OT, OT, there's never much love when we go OT. I pray to make it back in one piece.